Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 25th of August. This hour of the program, Social Security. Many seniors, millions actually, could see lower security checks next year. There are projections that there will be no cost of living adjustment for the first time in 25 years. Social Security benefits cannot go down, but many seniors have Medicare premiums that are taken out of those checks, and those premiums are expected to go up. And there are more than 32 million people in the Medicare prescription drug program. Everyone on Social Security just received a 5.8% increase in January based on cost of living. And we're going to be talking about how much of a pinch seniors will find themselves in when it comes to healthcare costs. And we'll also look at what seems to be a growing trend of seniors and their children and sometimes grandchildren deciding that they can have a better living if they all live under the same roof. So we'll talk about the problems and the joys associated with that with a professor of sociology at Framingham State University. All hour. And I would imagine we'll get a lot of calls. We haven't talked about Social Security in quite a while. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email today, you can do that. And that address is talk@WPR.org. Talk@WPR.org. I guess the first half hour is Barbara Cannelli. Barbara is president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. And she took this position in 2002 after 23 years in elected public office. She was appointed to the Social Security Advisory Board in 2006 and served on the Policy Committee for the 2005 White House Conference on Aging. She served 17 years in the U.S. House of Representatives, representing the 1st District of Connecticut, and in 96 was elected to her 8th full term. And she is with us the first half hour, and we'll be welcoming calls for her. Barbara Cannelli, thank you so much for being with us.
Kathleen, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, great pleasure. Well, let's talk about, is this a proposal concerning Social Security, or is this a fact?
Well, it really is a fact, Kathleen. It's so interesting to me. This trustees report for Social Security was put out in May, and there was a lot of coverage of it, but the situation with the COLA was not covered. As you know, there's a lot of talk that Social Security is in trouble, and a lot of the press plays that, and the annual surplus of Social Security went down for the first time because of the recession and other factors. So the COLA situation was not reported on. And then there was an AP article that talked about it, and it got picked up all over the country. I've had numerous calls from press about it. Well, I'm delighted because I think anything like this should be discussed with people before they're notified it's a fait accompli. And so what is happening here is, I heard you say earlier, you understand that last year it was 5.8% because of the huge increase in oil prices, and then they went down. And they went down so far that this year there will be no COLA. It's just because of the inflationary formula that is used. And the Social Security Administration will announce that in October. Well, that's a little late, because the checks, check with the no COLA will come in January. So I'm delighted to talk about it. I don't know what's going to happen, but certain things could change. And I want to make it very clear that this Congress had nothing to do with this. This is in the Social Security law. But if, in fact, members of Congress wanted to do something about it, they could pass a new law, and a simple new law, to see if seniors could get at least a minimum COLA.
Mm-hmm. Tell me how seniors will suffer as a consequence of having no COLA.
Well, here's the problem. The COLA is figured out on a market basket of goods. And as we know from last year, the cost of energy, oil and gas, is very much looked at. What isn't looked at in the market basket is the cost of health care to the extent it should be. And we know that seniors are using a disproportionate amount of their Social Security check on health care. So we're, you know, I don't like to exaggerate things. And is this the end of the world? No. But here we have a situation where seniors are feeling the impact of healthcare inflation. In fact, that's why we're having the healthcare reform debate. And they're not going to get a COLA to help them to pay for these increases in healthcare.
So the Medicare premiums will be going up, and that money's taken out of Social Security?
No, we have to just wait a minute. The way the law is written, if there's a zero COLA, your Part B does not go out. It's a hold harmless piece of the legislation. So Part B will not go up. Which isn't held harmless is the Part D. And as we know, prescriptions or drugs continue to escalate.
So Part D is the prescription drugs, and how much will that go up?
Oh, because it just goes up with inflation, and that is a premium that seniors pay, and it's already anticipated that it's going to continue to go up at a very high inflationary rate.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about how seniors are using more and more of their money for health care. What kind of statistics do you have about that, Barbara?
Well, I think right now they're using roughly $3 out of $10 of their Social Security check. But, you know, you look at the history of Medicare. I represented Hartford, Connecticut for many years. Well, that was the capital, the insurance capital of the world. Now, they wouldn't touch anybody who was a senior because they have more claims. When you get older, you know, you got some problems. So until 1965, seniors were in very bad shape as far as health insurance went. 65 came, they passed Medicare. Everybody 65 and older were put into a pool. The risk was shared, and this program has been a huge success. And what we're afraid of now, if you don't have health care reform in unison with Medicare, down the line, they'll just cut Medicare. So this has become very, very complicated. But there's no doubt. I mean, insurance companies weren't being mean. They have to make a profit. They have to report to their shareholders, whereas Medicare wants to serve seniors.
Right. And this is not just for the next year. This is for 2 years?
Yeah, and I kind of looking at that. We're trying to find, and we have found some members of Congress to support a minimum COLA. But I'm not asking for 2 years. I'm asking at least for 1 year because I think inflation will go up. From all I read, and I read all the time, I think there's a good chance that this projection could change next year. I don't know if it will. The Social Security trustees have said 2 years, but I'm at least looking at let's face this year. That's going to be a tough battle.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing going on with seniors and with everybody, but I'm sure it affects seniors in a larger way, is that, you know, what they have isn't worth as much. They've lost money in stock market, I'm sure. Their housing is not worth as much.
Well, that's why, Kathleen, the importance of these two programs, Social Security and Medicare, I have to constantly try to educate people on how important it is that we have social insurance, and that's Medicare and Medicaid and social insurance. You saw a few years ago, our president, former President Bush, one of his main things was to privatize Social Security. Aren't we glad he did?
Oh, my gosh, it would have been a disaster.
And you know who pushed back, Kathleen? It wasn't young people, because young people never think they're going to get middle-aged, let alone old.
Right.
I did meeting after meeting around the country, and my audiences were full of seniors. And they knew something, Kathleen. They knew how important Social Security was to them. But they also knew, say they had a 47-year-old daughter who had three or four children, and the business hadn't gone well, or somebody was sick, or just things hadn't worked out. They know that their children are going to need Social Security just as much as they need Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there was a real pushback on that. And that's why I think seniors are, people are upset that seniors are out yelling and screaming at these meetings. Well, let me tell you something. Medicare is worth yelling and screaming about. But what message I have for my members, and by the way, we have 3 million members and supporters in the National Committee, what I'm saying to them is, we can't not have health care reform with Medicare to cut these costs down. Otherwise, down the line, as we know Medicare has some problems in funding, down the line it'll only be cutting Medicare and everybody else will go dancing along.
Mm-hmm.
So this is tough. This is very, very tough.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about health care reform and seniors, my message to them is we do not know yet what's going to happen. This whole thing is a work, going on. We got three bills out of the House. major committees, but they have to go to the Rules Committee to be put together, to be melded together before they go to the floor. And then in the Senate, you've got Senator Kennedy's bill, which we love, but we know a lot of people think is too expensive. And then you got the Finance Committee with the six senators meeting and meeting and meeting, and none of us know what's going to be in that bill. Mm-hmm. So we're not endorsing any health care reform until we see the product.
Right. Are you calling right now for a minimum COLA?
Yes, I am.
And what would it be?
I'm looking at taking a percentage of the Social Security check. And this could be easily done because we got the names and we've got the addresses. And, you know, you could bump it up a percentage, maybe 1%, 1.5%, and then send it out with the check. Now, the thing about that is that has to be done by October because the computers have to be reset. The other way of doing it, and this is a little more controversial but makes sense to me, is to have a lump sum. Say $150, $200 sent to those on Social Security, and that would have to be scored by the Congressional Budget Office. But another anomaly in this bill is that when there's no COLA, the wage cap, you know, that's when you stop paying Social Security on your wages.
Right.
It's $100,860 now. The wage cap doesn't go up. And we know that higher income people's wages have gone up. So they could eliminate that and pay for the flat check with that. And mm-hmm. and not sophisticated legislation at all, just a simple bill.
Mm-hmm. So do you have support for that?
I am talking to a senator who's very interested in putting this in and two congressmen that are very interested. This morning in the Washington Post, there was an op-ed saying, you know, seniors, what do you mean? They already got no stimulus. They got $250. What do they want this something else for? And I mean, it was a terrible op-ed. But this was the same person who was the executive director of President Bush's commission to privatize Social Security. So, you know, Social Security since 1935 has had enemies. It continues to have enemies. They never let up. And, you know, when you think, I always like to say three out of four seniors live on less, well, they're $20,000 and less. Two-thirds of seniors depend on Social Security for half their income. These are moderate things. The average Social Security for a year, the average, is $13,800. Well, that's tough to live on that. And so you're saying, well, they don't deserve to get this COLA? I mean, please.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Barbara Cannelli is our guest the first half hour. She is president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. She served in Congress for a number of years in the U.S. House of Representatives, representing the 1st District of Connecticut. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And let's go to Ken from Milton, our first caller. Hi, Ken.
Hello. As far as that market basket determining the cost of living, I always understood that the price of gasoline was not part of that market basket. And I think the price of energy itself, I mean, for heating, is not also. But I'm very sure that the price of gasoline is not part of that market basket.
Well, I think the price of a barrel of oil is in that, and that's what put the COLA be 5.8% last year. Energy costs are in there.
I don't think so.
Well, your definition of energy and my definition of energy might be different, but I do know that the reason the 5.8% COLA was so high was the energy costs or oil costs or, you know, had skyrocketed. And that is documented. Now, what the definition is, I really don't know.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to...
Excuse me.
That's okay. Is that a... Hello? Oh, Barbara, are you there? We're going to have to try and find her again. I don't know. Was that a phone? That was really... an unusual sound. Barbara Cannelli is our guest for the first half hour. We are talking about no cost of living increase. in Social Security, which will affect millions of seniors. As we've been discussing here, the reason is that we had this 5.8% increase in January, our guests saying due to energy costs, but seniors for the next 2 years would not have cost of living increases. And we're talking about whether or not how they will be affected by that. And welcoming your phone calls, 800-486-8655 is our number. Or the email address, if you'd like to send an email, is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We've been doing a series of programs on healthcare reform on Tuesdays at 10 o'clock. Today we'll be looking at healthcare in the Caribbean, which of course encompasses a very large area, but there have been lots of attempts to look at a regional approach to healthcare. And so we will speak with a guest from Barbados, the second hour of our program today. For you to speak with Barbara, 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. And we have some lines open. Just a few comments from you, Barbara, on Social Security as a whole. Is it, you were talking about whether or not it is in trouble. Is it in trouble?
Well, Kathleen, is it broke? Is it in trouble? No, it isn't. That same trustees report that told us that the COLA was going to be zero for the next 2 years tells us that Social Security has a surplus to 2016. Now, you realize, Kathleen, Social Security is the only federal program that has a surplus and continues to. And then, of course, we have the trust fund, and the big debate is about the trust fund. Well, I know I've worked all my adult life, and I've had the FICA taken out of my pay roll, and I expect to have the promises kept for Social Security. The surpluses that we had over the years was borrowed by other branches of government, but when they borrowed it, they put a bond into the trust fund. Now, the only way you don't have to pay the trust fund bonds is by reneging on them. And the United States has never reneged on a bond. So there is a debate going on, but right now they still are running a surplus to 2016. They have the trust fund to 2037. And then, yes, there's only 75%. What the enemies of Social Security try to act like is that nobody's paying in the system as we go along. Even in 2037, 75% is covered because we got workers. I was in Congress in 1983 when we did the reform. We knew the baby boomers were coming. I took some of the toughest votes I ever took. Raise the age, tax Social Security, awful votes. But we knew they were coming, and the reason we raised the payroll tax was to get ready for them. And now to say that we can't afford them is absolutely ludicrous.
Let's go to Ron from Door. Excuse me, Ron from Door County next. Hi, Ron.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Yeah, go right ahead, Ron.
Okay, I had a question for your guest. My understanding is that the Part D average medical premium is $32. And the projection is that it'll go up to, $30 now, it'll go up to $32. So the actual cost that we're working with here is $2 a month. Can your guest clarify the actual dollar amount that we're talking per month for senior health care cost increase?
On Part B, it won't go up because the projection for the COLA is zero. So for Part B, it won't go up for the next 2 years. On Part D, it continues to go up because we still haven't got a hold of the drug prices, and they continue to go up. But I'm at my home, and I don't have my figures in front of me, but I think you're a little high on the Part B on a monthly.
Oh, yes. My understanding is that the actual amount would be somewhere around $2 a month.
Does that sound about right, Barbara?
Yeah.
So we're talking $24
a month. But then it'll be higher. It was $2
a month. $24 a year for the seniors to find to continue their Part D coverage.
Well, the Part B coverage will not go up the next 2 years. But then if, in fact, we didn't have this projection of no COLA, it would have gone up much more than $2. And, of course, the Part D, absolutely, unless we get that under control, will go up higher. And we see that right across the country.
Mm-hmm. Is there talk, you know, we're trying to, as you well know, trying to reform healthcare in this country. Would it be beneficial for the whole Medicare system if we had more people, be it young children in this country, covered by Medicare, or increase the number of slightly younger old people to be in Medicare? If we expanded that system as a part of our healthcare reform, would it strengthen the system?
Well, there's been legislation introduced over the years, every year, calling for Medicare for all. The health care reform that we're looking at now, or the president is hoping for, I don't know what's going to happen, but what he's hoping for is that, yes, everybody will be covered. And, you know, it's become very, very complicated. But right now, I have to tell you, I am so concerned about Medicare that I'm concentrating on Medicare to make sure that it's part of health care and it's not just looked at for cuts, but it's looked at to be strengthened. And that's a battle, I have to tell you, because up till now, so many members of Congress were just mesmerized about these new ideas about health care reform. They were ignoring Medicare. Then all of a sudden it comes out that Medicare is going to be looked at for $500 billion. And I don't blame seniors for being upset about that. But what they have to understand is half of that goes back into Medicare. The doctors, the providers, the doctors, they're Medicare cut in January would be cut by 21%. Well, if your doctor is getting 21% less for covering a Medicare patient, he's not going to do it. He's right. going to go for the private patient. And so that's why I'm so insistent that Medicare be part of the broad health care reform so that everybody's inflation is reduced. If you only look at Medicare, and that's what CBO can score, if you only look at Medicare, then you're going to hurt Medicare, let alone cover everybody with Medicare.
Mm-hmm. 21% reduction, that's quite high.
Yeah, it'll never happen. What has happened, the law has been, unreasonable. So every year what the Congress does is they fix it for a year, fix it for 2 years, fix it for a year. Well, that was kind of run out of time. And so doctors are getting impatient. You can't blame them. They want to be paid for their work. And certainly they want Medicare patients. They know Medicare patients do have ills. So, but seniors have to understand that, you know, that will help Medicare. And then another thing that is in the health care reform bills in the House is the donut hole, which was outrageous. No insurance product has a donut hole. And that donut hole is getting bigger and bigger, and some people are going in and never coming out. And the House bills, now the good news is they fixed it. The bad news is that it takes 14 years. However, the drug companies, and this shows how much money they're making, they've put $80 billion on the table saying they'll give a 50% discount to brand drugs if you go in the donut hole. So, you know, health care reform admits that we've got to do something about this donut hole.
Yeah. Let's take one more phone call for you. Ron from Green Bay. Hi, Ron.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is that what is the total of the IOUs that are in the Social Security funds? And then I'm concerned about the way they report that as the pay-as-you-go, the employees that are working now, that fund will be broke, but then they say that it needs a general tax increase. However, it really is if they would just pay back the IOUs, which I know would entail a tax increase, but I think they're misrepresenting the tax and what it's for.
Well, right now, the trust fund has roughly $2.6 trillion in it. Eventually, it'll have $5 trillion in it, and that's enough to cover the people. But your caller is absolutely right. There's an incredible amount of misinformation about the trust fund because it's always had people that, you know, what it is they don't want to pay, honor those bonds, and they figure, you know, down the line they're going to have to. And it's like the sky is falling theory. You say, oh, it's broke, it's bust, those bonds are just paper. Well, if you think everything is so bad, then you'll accept, you know, a smaller cut. And that shouldn't be because, as I said before, the baby boomers had been accounted for, but there's a lot of false information. And also, all those bonds are not going to be collected immediately. Right now, part of Medicare is collecting the trust fund bonds, and no one says a word. And in Social Security, only a percentage of that $2.5 trillion would be looked at. And it won't even be looked at 2017, and then 2027, and then 2037.
And my understanding is that they're not reporting those IOUs as part of the federal debt.
It's on the unified budget.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. We'll just do one more phone call. Scott's been waiting for a while from La Crosse. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you so much. My question is getting back to that market basket. First of all, I'm not sure exactly I understand how they figure that there is zero inflation or that there's even some, you know, minor deflation. Anybody who goes to the supermarket, I don't see these prices exactly going down. They're not shooting up as much as they maybe did last year, but I still see things just edging a little bit higher, a little bit higher, a little bit higher, and I'm assuming everybody's shopping at the same in the same general marketplace that I am. And secondly, in terms of this, how they can forecast out 2 years, we see already how quickly the oil speculators can drive the price of crude up just based on the fact that they think the world economy, and we are in a world economy, is getting better. And if we get into a position of stagflation for us, like the Japanese were in a couple decades ago, where you know our economy is sputtering along, but the rest of the world, you know, China and Europe have come back roaring back and are driving the price of all the of everything up, including crude oil. And you know, we know how fast prices can go up. 2 years, they figured, no cola. I mean, it seems to me like we could get into a position where prices would skyrocket and there we would be locked in. Does that seem like a real possibility to you?
Well, first of all, I couldn't agree with you more, and that's why I'm trying to get a minimum cola when there's, you know, projected no cola, because you're absolutely right. Prices are going up, and for seniors, the price of health care is going up, the price of food is going up, and I'm being told that, you know, there's... You know, no inflation is very difficult, but the formula is there, and they are abiding by the formula. And, Scott, I agree with you. I'm scared to death of stagflation. And I think possibly, you know, this year is locked in, but every year the trustees have a report that everybody waits for, and that report has to be done again next year. Another thing that we're trying to convince the Social Security trustees is that seniors should have a different market basket that addresses them. I mean, they don't use some of the things in the present market basket, but they certainly use health care. And health care is not targeted the way it should be, not only for seniors, but for anybody else.
Thank you, Scott, very much for the call. Thank you. Appreciate it. Barbara, thank you so much. You've been a wealth of information. I appreciate your time.
And Kathleen, I'm going to talk to Kathleen Sebelius in a little while.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, she and I went to the same college, so I've known her for years.
Ah.
So, but anyway, I love the name Kathleen, and she's a terrific person.
Thank you. Tell her to do our show sometime.
you should call her, because I bet she would. She's very articulate.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Thanks, okay. Barbara. Thanks. Actually, we should get her to be at our healthcare forum, which is taking place on September 16 at Frederick Hospital here in Milwaukee. We're going to have a two-hour forum from Frederick with everybody who's involved in this debate. I mean, not everybody, because that would be thousands of people, but representatives from all major areas, from the healthcare field, people who deliver healthcare, the insurance companies, people who don't have healthcare, you name it. They will be represented on our panel. September 16 is the day. You do need to register for that. It's free, but we want it's not a huge space. We want it to be somewhat intimate, so we need to know that you're going to be there. So reservations, but free to you. So give us a call if you'd like to attend. I'll just give you our office number right now, which is 227-2040, 227-2040. The area code is 414. We move now to the consequences of being an older person and not having very much money, or being a younger person and not having very much money, too. The economy is hitting people certainly of all ages. And it's been shown now that more families are starting to move in with each other, so that parents are starting to move in with their children, and we're in a small way returning to families, extended families living under one roof. Is this a good idea? Did we miss something in terms of of helping each other with all of the tasks of living when we moved to another arrangement in the last century. And it's a good idea for us to start thinking about having our parents live with us or our aunts and uncles or extended family. This half hour of the program, Professor Virginia Rutter will be joining us. And Professor Rutter is assistant professor of sociology at Framingham State College. She's been working at the intersection of academia and media for 2 decades. She's the author of a number of books, including The Gender of Sexuality and The Love Test. She writes for psychological magazines and has written on many topics, including divorce, marriage, gender, sexuality, stepfamilies, adolescence, infidelity, depression, women in science, psychotherapy research, couples therapy, and domestic violence. We'll be continuing our phone calls. For those of you who have moved the family under one roof or moved your parents in, partially because of some of the issues that we were talking about earlier, the expenses that, mostly medical expenses, that seniors face, we'd like very much to hear from you about how it's going. 800-486-8655 is the number. Professor Virginia Rutter, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, Kathleen.
Tell me, is this a growing trend that we're seeing more families just get together and parents and children, be they older parents and probably older children and their grandchildren, moving in together? Is this a growing trend?
It looks like it's a growing trend, and it's interesting. The AARP did a survey about this in March, and grandparents.com did a survey about the same question, how much are we moving in, and found that 11 to 13% of younger adults between 25 and 45 are living with their older parents, and that their older parents are living with, you know, they're all living together. And what's interesting to me, I teach and look at this phenomenon of emerging adulthood, so how younger adults are ending up extending their sort of having these long-term transitions into adulthood, meaning that they're living with their parents longer. So we've been looking at and a lot of people have been looking at younger people going through the stage of living with their parents longer than we've thought. Now we're looking at it from the other end to see how the older generation is also kind of driven or compelled, because of all the things that Barbara Cannelli was talking about, compelled to try to throw our lots in together. So I think it is a trend.
You know,
right now.
And I'm wondering if you think it is a positive one or a negative one. Our model certainly for the past generation has been you reach a certain age, you're off on your own, you go to assisted living if you need help. We all need to be rugged individualists, and all kinds of problems will arise if we all live under the same roof.
Well, whether it's good or it's bad is going to depend on a lot of different things. I mean, we might as well deal with the reality that this is what people are doing. I'm of the opinion that there are many good things about this, in the sense that one of the things that my colleague at the Council on Contemporary Families, Stephanie Kuntz, has talked about is the way that our families, you know, this old thing, this rugged individualism idea that you're talking about, that idea comes from the really 20th century and a little bit 19th century glorification of the nuclear family, where we really separate ourselves from each other a lot. That's changed in the past 20 years. We have more blended families, step families. We have these more multi-generation households now, including at the White House. And these changes are interesting because they are associated with some emotional or psychological changes that we've gone through. Instead of where in, let's say, use the cartoon version of the 1950s family, where there's this sense of a lot of hierarchy and formality in families. In families today, we actually have the skills and experience and aspiration to be friends with each other, to have a more democratic, family, and I think that approach of being more having real substantive friendships with our family members across the generations, from the younger, middle, and older generations, actually is what makes this trend promising and perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that it's prompted in some ways now because of the fact that people are losing their jobs, may not have as much money, that we're there to help each other out financially.
Right, absolutely. And this is the part that I would say, if you ask the question, is this a good thing or a bad thing? I think what we see about families as being more democratic and more intimate and more volunteeristic, and we're together because we want to be together in one sense. But on the other hand, what's going on right now is families, especially in the past 20 years, have been under siege with respect to a whole host of policies, economic policies that may not look explicitly like they have to do with families, that tend to create this fewer and fewer resources for people on the lower end of the range, because all of our prosperity has gone to the upper 0.1% of the income distribution. So you have a lot of stress on families that means that there are economic policies and family policies that have made this really hard. In particular, when I think about this, Barbara Cannelli and you were talking about health care issues, and they're just, how can we stop thinking about health care right now? It's just, it is on our minds so terribly. And I think about how we don't have adequate family leave. We don't have paid sick leave. We don't have vacation leave in the U.S. Like we have in comparable European economies. And these issues are issues for the older generation, as well as the middle generation and the younger generation, because these are pieces along with health care that will help us to kind of fulfill the promise of having families take care of each other.
Right. Well, it's also hard. I mean, this isn't obvious, but as people are living longer, healthcare problems may be more frequent, and you find yourselves with your parents living with you, and there are just innumerable stories. You can probably tell us many of having to care for an older parent, and it is disruptive of your life because the medical needs can be pretty overwhelming.
Right. Right. And those medical needs, if you think about anyone who's gone through my partner's mother just went through not a very long process of dying with cancer, but it was a chronic, severe terminal illness, and the emotional voyage of that illness, of her process of dying, was so intense. And we luckily, because his family had, my partner's family had very good health insurance, they were blessed not to have the kind of stress that I think many, many, many families face when they're facing a terminal illness. Now, a chronic illness like Parkinson's or like multiple sclerosis or like severe arthritis, those chronic illnesses mean that you've got the heartache of the psychological challenges of saying, let's not even call it heartache. I mean, we all end up with disabilities. We all end up at one time or another not being exactly the way we were last year. And navigating that, along with navigating the stress on time and on our bank accounts, is something that it makes these transitions into multi-generational families on the one hand important to do, but on the other hand, very stressful in the absence of some public policy that helps.
And we'll talk about that public policy in a moment, and welcome phone calls. We have several people on the line. Our guest this half hour, Professor Virginia Rutter, one of the answers to increased cost of living and not as much money coming in for seniors is multi-generational families living together, sharing expenses, sharing the joys and the stresses of living. And it's not always easy. We're talking about that as a model and welcoming your calls. 800-486-8655 is the number. You can use the email, too. You've been quiet on that today, but that's open to you. It's talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. After the news from National Public Radio, we continue our Tuesday series on health care reform. We've been emphasizing health care in other countries. We've looked at France and Canada and the federal employees system, the Caribbean, and there are a variety of programs, but there are certain kinds of philosophies that guide many of the countries in the Caribbean. Our guest, a doctor from Barbados. All right, let's go to phone calls for Professor Virginia Rutter and to Jan from Sauk City. Hi, Jan.
Hi there. First of all, let me say that the person who answered the phone is marvelous.
John Treader.
The first time I was calling, I didn't know what to expect. And the person who answered the phone was very nice.
Yes, he is. All right.
Yeah. Anyway, my comment is I'm nearing retirement, although I'm sure I'm never going to be able to retire, but I work a full-time and two part-time jobs. My son has had to move in with me. I haven't moved in with him because he lost several of the hours. He's working, but more on a part-time basis. He can't afford even insurance on his car, his health, or anything. So I've had to have him live with me, which, of course, even puts the possibility of retiring even farther in the future. And it is very stressful. It's very difficult. But I love my son, and I really would do nothing else because I think it is just that important. You know, you have to do for your family, I think, you know, and I just hope I don't get sick because if I get sick, we're both in trouble. But I just wanted to let you know it isn't necessarily the parents moving in with the kids. In my case, and several of my friends, their children have moved in with them. Thank you.
And I think that that's the where a lot of the people who I do research with have looked a lot at the younger generation and the stress that they've had. I mean, I don't know, Jan, how old your son is, but especially kids in their 20s are having are moving back in with their parents a lot, and it's people, kids in their 30s and 40s have been. There's been a lot written on how, with house foreclosures and job loss, that these have been times exactly. I think that you're talking about a situation that we've been seeing for a while. And then the new thing is seeing what you're thinking about up ahead is what's going to happen to you? What are the resources for you as you're trying to make ends meet after retirement?
You use the phrase public policy, and I was wondering what kind of public policy would make it easier for us to either all live together or for us to eliminate some of the causes of our needing to live together?
What public policies? Well, public policy isn't my number one strength, but the things that I'm particularly concerned about are there's a series of papers from the Center on Economic and Policy Research on family leave, on paid sick leave, and on vacation leave that I think provide a lot of information about the benefits of creating the humane environment. I mean, obviously, we need to have some form of national health care that takes care of all of our generations. And as Barbara Cannelli was saying, health care reform that helps reduce the big chunk out of Social Security checks that health care is taking from seniors. But for the humanity, I mean, if we're thinking about the psychological side, the humanity of creating time and space for people to have productive lives while they're taking care of their families and themselves by having family leave, paid sick leave, and vacation leave are three policies that I think are terribly important for making this make sense.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine that if you are in a situation where your parents are living with you or your children are living with you to make ends meet, that you got to be, because we've had this pattern for so long of having our own space, that you need, and I've read articles about this, where people need to have their own space within, it's almost like a communal space, right? So you share a kitchen, you may share the bathrooms, but it's nice to have a place where you can close the door and say, that's it for now.
Right. Whatever the generations are, you know, when you were dealing with your teenage children, when your 30-year-old children were learning how to set boundaries with you around their marriage or they're raising their children, each stage of our kind of these different intergenerational relationships we have, a big piece of it is going to be setting boundaries. And that's a kind of psychological phrase that just sounds like a bunch of, you know, stuff that people who read psychology magazines talk about. But the point is that there are some very fundamental skills. When I started studying family systems and family therapy 20 years ago, the way that it made sense to me is that it was about having good manners. And my mom will be so appreciative to hear me sort of bring manners into this. But I honestly think that, I mean, the way I've transformed that into the concept of skills, there are a lot of skills there that we can bring to bear and that we can keep learning as we get older that are about giving everyone space and respect. And one of the things, you know, when Jan just got on the phone right now, the first thing she said was something kind about John, producer. And that kind of, it struck me as like, oh, this is somebody who's got some great skills because she was able to be kind first off. Mm-hmm. And I think that in families, one of the things that we do, I mean, thank goodness you have some place where you can go and not have to be, you know, mind your manners perfectly and nobody's going to get mad at you if you don't close the cabinet door the fifth time. But the point is that if you show some kindness on a regular basis, that can help a lot. And part of kindness is showing people that you love and value the limits that they want to put forward about their quiet time or their choice of how to schedule when they're going to carry the garbage out. These very basic things, these aren't going to solve the big policy problems, but these very basic things that you're talking about how do we get along in the house, really come down to the simplest way to think about it is just having good manners that emphasize kindness.
Yep, I'm with you on that. That was Kurt Vonnegut's big line, wasn't it? That's what the world needs is more human kindness.
Yes.
Be a much, much better place.
Yeah, I had a saying when my family, it was 10 years ago, my family went, there were three generations of us, many step families, many, you know, half of us widows and new families, and just a really complicated family scene. And but we were all together in a couple of houses somewhere, and I made these T-shirts, be calm, kind, and keep your voice down. And they're not deep ideas, but they seem to be keys to having a great time.
But they are deep ideas.
Mm-hmm.
They really are.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jan, for the call. Joan from Milwaukee, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm going to go back to the policy issue a little bit. I can't help that she's not an expert, but I've had a son and a daughter move in together because of very great need. And food stamps are cut because you're living under the same roof. Then some benefits are cut because they assume that you're going to help each other, even if you're both strapped. The other thing is I'm paying one whole check, either Social Security or my teacher's pension check, goes to paying back debts that we won't go into, but one whole check goes to that. But if it comes to me trying to get help in raising my grandson or getting him free lunch, both checks are counted, even though I'm paying 100% back to people I owe money to. There's no income tax break, and I get taxed on the money that I'm paying back. So there are a lot of policies, if somebody would look into that, that might not cost the government too much, that are totally unfair.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are always policies that can help people, right, Professor Rutter?
There are. What I'm thinking about, are you wondering whether there could be policies where you could renegotiate some of your debt? Is that one of the ideas that you were thinking of?
No, I make too much money with the two checks, and I always was of the generation that would want to pay back 100%. One of, one of my motivations for living is to pay it all back. Mm-hmm. It'll take me 5 years, but maybe it'll keep me alive because mm-hmm. I'm mean and
Well, I mean, I want to salute you for all the incredible care that you're engaging in, and I'm sure that it takes a lot of strength to stay engaged in caring for the people who are in your family and for keeping up with your obligations. What I was asking about, though, is that there's a lot of interesting work, especially by the economist Dean Baker at the, I've mentioned this before, the Center on Economic and Policy Research about different, he focuses a lot on housing debt. But in general, these thoughts about you're paying back your debt, but that debt is associated with some enormous, I would imagine, and we don't need to go into the particulars of your debt, but if it's credit card debt, you're paying these exorbitant rates that are tied to the original amount that you borrowed. And so people who are under that condition, you are doing the honorable thing, but it's not clear. The notion of having policies where you could renegotiate debt may be something that isn't about your saying, I'm not going to honor my debts, but that, you know, perhaps there are ways that we as a society can still keep.
Right. And on that note, we have to end because we're out of time. Thank you very, very much for being with us, Virginia Rutter. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Rob Schroeder for producing and John Treader for on-air production.